An enlightening discussion on a thought-provoking article, Environmental Balance Sheet, A New Concept in Environment Management by Dr. S. K. Srivastava follows.
Hey everyone, and welcome back. Today we're going on a deep dive into something, a concept that really caught my eye. It's called the Environmental Balance Sheet.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and we're going to be using this academic paper as our guide. It basically proposes a new way of thinking about how we impact the planet.
I like it already. So it's like a new lens to look at our relationship with the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm in. What's the paper called?
It's called Environmental Balance Sheet, A New Concept in Environment Management.
Okay.
And the way they present it in this paper is like kind of unique. It uses like the structure of a financial balance sheet, like what businesses use.
Okay, yeah.
To track our, you know, what we do to the environment, good or bad.
Oh, that's cool. So instead of dollars and cents, it's like environmental debits and credits.
Yeah, exactly. Debits and credits.
I like that. It's very concrete. It's something that people can grasp,
right? Yeah, yeah. It makes it very tangible.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I'm not like an accounting whiz. So can we like break down what it actually means to have this environmental debt?
Yeah, absolutely. So think of it this way. Every action that we do, everything we do, has some kind of impact on the environment.
Right.
Some of those actions deplete resources or generate waste. Those are our environmental debits.
So like driving a car.
Driving a car, exactly.
Using electricity, buying stuff.
All of that, yeah. And the paper gives some really specific examples, like water usage, for instance.
Okay.
We kind of take it for granted, right? But clean water is a big deal globally.
Right.
And every liter that we use, mm-hmm. whether it's for a shower or, you know, watering our lawn or even making the products we buy, that all contributes to that debit.
Makes sense. But so the paper isn't all doom and gloom, right? There's the credit side too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So those environmental credits are actions that replenish or restore the environment.
Okay.
Think about things like planting trees.
Okay.
Trees absorb carbon dioxide. Using renewable energy like solar or wind power.
Right.
Those are all credits.
Okay. So it's not just about minimizing harm, but actually doing good. I like that.
Yeah. It's more proactive approach.
Yeah. It's more encouraging. But, you know, how do we actually measure this? Like assign a value to a tree versus like a gallon of gas. It seems pretty complicated.
Yeah. It's one of the, you know, challenges with this concept. And the paper acknowledges that.
Okay.
You know, there are different methodologies and people are working on ways to quantify it, but it is a complex field. Some things are, you know, more straightforward, like the carbon emissions from burning fossil fuels.
Right.
But other things, like biodiversity loss or the disruption of ecosystems, mm-hmm. are tougher to put a number on.
I see. Yeah.
But even with that challenge, it gives us a framework, right?
Right. It's a starting point. And it's not just for individuals, right? The paper talks about applying this on, like, a much larger scale.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's where it gets really interesting.
Like, how big are we talking?
We're talking whole cities.
Yeah.
We're talking businesses, even countries.
Okay, wait. That's a huge jump from my morning shower. So how would that work, like, for a whole city?
So imagine, right, a city's planning a new development project.
Okay, yeah.
They could use this environmental balance sheet to look at how that project will affect things like water resources, air quality, you know, the local ecosystems.
Interesting.
So it's not just about, hey, will this bring in money? Mm. It's what's the overall cost environmentally?
I see. So it's like a sustainability checklist for urban planning.
Exactly. And on the credit side for a city, that could mean investing in renewable energy infrastructure, creating green spaces, having programs to reduce waste.
So they're aiming for that environmental surplus, right? Where the good outweighs the bad.
Exactly. Trying to tip the scales in favor of the planet.
Okay, now I'm seeing how powerful this concept could be. It's not just about feeling bad about our own choices, but thinking how to actually change the system.
Right, exactly. Shifting from minimizing harm to actually restoring and regenerating the environment.
Yeah, I like that. But I have to ask, you know, climate change, these huge problems, it can feel so overwhelming. Does the paper, like, address how our individual actions make a difference?
Yeah. It does. And it makes the point that, look, one person's actions alone can't solve these global issues.
Right, right.
But they matter for two reasons. One is that those individual choices, when you multiply them by millions of people, mm-hmm. they have a big impact.
It's that butterfly effect thing.
Yeah. Small changes can lead to big shifts. Mm-hmm. But the second reason is that what individuals choose often drives what businesses do.
William.
when people start buying eco-friendly products, companies pay attention. They start offering more of those options. It's like a feedback loop.
So we're using our purchasing power to kind of vote for the world we want.
Exactly. And that ties back to the environmental balance sheet. When we understand the impact of our choices, the food we buy, the clothes, how we travel, we make better decisions that lead to a positive environmental balance.
It's about being aware, basically.
Yeah. Being aware and then making choices that align with that awareness.
I'm starting to see how this can really change how we think about our relationship with the planet.
Yeah, it's not about abstract ideas or far-off problems. It's about what we do every day.
Exactly. But I'm curious, are there any debits that we might not even realize we're racking up? Like things that are surprising?
Oh, yeah. There are some eye-openers for sure. For instance, the paper talks about the impact of the food we eat. And it's not just about meat versus vegetarian.
Really?
Certain fruits, vegetables, even staple crops can have big impacts depending on how much water they need to grow, how far they travel, the pesticides and fertilizers used.
So even healthy choices can have hidden costs.
Exactly.
Man, this is complex. I guess that's why we're doing this deep dive, right?
Right. Peeling back the layers.
So give me some examples of these debit items, and let's break down why they matter.
All right, let's start with one that's super relevant today. Our digital footprint.
Wait, our digital footprint? Like, how does streaming movies or being on social media hurt the environment?
So it's all about energy, right? Data centers, those massive server farms that power the internet, they use a ton of electricity. And a lot of that electricity still comes from fossil fuels.
So every email, every video, every, like, on social media, it all adds up.
It does. And it's not even just the energy our devices use directly.
Right.
It's also the energy that goes into making those devices, shipping them, mining the materials they're made from.
Wow. It really is all connected, like a domino effect.
It is. And the environmental balance sheet helps us see those connections.
Okay, I'm already rethinking my screen time habits, but is there a credit side to our digital lives too? Like, can we make it more eco-friendly?
There are some things we can do. For example, we can support companies that are using renewable energy to power their data centers.
Oh, so like choosing a green web hosting provider.
Exactly.
And what about just deleting old emails and files? I'm terrible at that. Does that help?
It actually does. Might seem small, but multiply that by millions of users, it starts to add up.
Okay, feeling slightly less guilty now. It's not just about feeling helpless, but finding things we can actually control.
Exactly. Finding those actions that move the needle.
Okay, so we've got the digital stuff, but the paper also mentions embodied energy. What is that, and why is it important for our environmental balance sheet?
So embodied energy is all the energy that goes into making a product or service from start to finish. Raw materials, manufacturing, transportation, even disposal at the end.
So it's not just the energy I use, but the energy it took to make the things I use.
Got it. And this is often hidden, right? We might buy a fuel-efficient car thinking it's sustainable. But what about all the energy that went into making that car in the first place?
It's like this whole invisible cost.
Exactly. Embodied energy makes us think about the whole life cycle of what we buy, not just how we use it.
I get it. So what are some things with really high embodied energy that we might not realize?
Well, electronics are a big one. Smartphones, computers, all those complex parts, the rare earth minerals.
Right. I've heard about those mines, the impact they have.
It's significant.
Yeah.
But even everyday stuff can be surprising. Processed foods often have high embodied energy because of all the processing, packaging, shipping.
So like a bag of chips is worse than I thought.
Could be. Yeah. It all adds up, which is why being a mindful consumer is so important.
Okay, I'm getting the message. This is a lot to track, though. Do we really need to become environmental accountants in our daily lives?
Not at all. Start small. Focus on where you can make the biggest difference.
So not calculating every little thing, but maybe focusing on a few key areas.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe you focus on eating more locally sourced food, or cutting back on single-use plastics, or swapping car trips for walking, biking, or public transport whenever you can.
It's those little swaps that add up, shifting the balance bit by bit.
Exactly. And as you become more aware, it becomes more natural. You start seeing those connections everywhere.
This is really eye-opening. I'm getting energized by this, not overwhelmed. But before we go too deep on individual stuff, I want to circle back to the bigger picture. The paper mentions using environmental balance sheets for whole nations, even globally. How would that even work, and why is that important?
Imagine a world where we judge countries not just on how rich they are, but also how well they treat the environment.
So it's adding an environmental scorecard to how we measure progress.
Exactly. and that could change how policies are made. Suddenly, countries would be competing to invest in renewable energy, protect their natural resources, lower their impact, just to improve their environmental balance.
It's like a global sustainability competition.
You could say that. But it's not just about competition. It's about working together, too. Countries can share what works, support each other's efforts, tackle those big challenges collaboratively.
This is fascinating, but is anyone actually doing this? Or is it just an idea?
There are a few countries starting to experiment. The paper mentions Bhutan, a small Himalayan nation. They have this gross national happiness index that includes environmental factors alongside the usual economic stuff.
Wow, so they're measuring well-being and sustainability, not just money.
Exactly. And while Bhutan is unique, it shows that more and more people are realizing that just looking at GDP isn't enough. We need to value clean air, clean water, healthy ecosystems, all of it.
This is making me rethink what progress even means.
That's the power of this concept. And the environmental balance sheet gives us a framework to actually measure those things.
This is seriously eye-opening. I'm already seeing the world differently, thinking about the hidden costs, but also the potential for positive change.
That's what's exciting about this. It sparks awareness and inspires action.
But let's be real. There must be challenges too, right? Downsides to consider. Does the paper address that?
It does. And I think it's important to acknowledge those to get a balanced view.
Okay, like what?
One of the biggest challenges is just how complex it is to measure environmental impact and put a price tag on it.
Right. We talked about that earlier. It's hard to measure things like biodiversity loss.
Exactly. And even with things that are easy to measure, like carbon emissions, there's still debate about how to put a dollar value on them.
So it's not a perfect system. Yeah, and there's always the risk that people could manipulate it, right?
That's true. Just like with financial accounting, there's potential for greenwashing companies making their environmental record look better than it is.
So we need ways to keep things transparent, to make sure it's being used honestly.
Absolutely. Transparency and accountability are key. We also have to remember that this is just one tool. It's not a silver bullet solution.
Right. It's part of a bigger strategy.
Exactly. It's about using the tools we have to make better decisions and move towards a more sustainable way of life.
Well said. That's a good point to pause, I think. We've covered a lot in this first part of our deep dive, from the basics of the environmental balance sheet to how it could even work on a global scale.
And we've talked about some of the challenges and complexities.
But I'm excited to hear more about the specific examples from the paper. What are some of the most innovative ways this is being put into action?
I'm happy to dive into those in the next part. There's some really fascinating case studies of cities, businesses, even individuals using the environmental balance sheet to make a real difference.
Okay, I can't wait to hear about those. We'll be back after a short break to continue our deep dive into the environmental balance sheet.
Welcome back, everyone. Before the break, we were getting into some of the trickier parts of using environmental balance sheets on a bigger scale. But let's look at how this is actually working in the real world.
Yeah, I'm ready for some positive examples. Does the paper highlight any specific cases where this is, like, really making a difference?
There are some really interesting initiatives happening at the city level. There's one city in Europe that the paper mentions that's using an environmental balance sheet to actually guide their urban planning.
Wow, so they're actually using it to make decisions. That's cool.
Yeah, they're taking into account things like preserving green spaces, energy efficiency in buildings, even how their transportation systems impact the environment.
So it's not just about, like, reducing pollution. It's about making the whole city more sustainable. What kinds of changes have they actually made because of this approach?
One example is how they've approached public transportation.
Mm.
They've put a lot of effort into expanding their tram network and making it super accessible.
Okay.
And that's led to more people ditching their cars and using the trams. Less traffic, better air quality. It's a win-win.
It's like a positive feedback loop. They're getting those environmental credits by creating better options for people.
Exactly. So instead of just saying don't drive, they're making it easier and more appealing to choose a sustainable option.
I love that approach. Does the paper have any examples from, like, the business world?
Yeah, and this is where it gets really interesting. There's a case study of a clothing company that's completely rethinking their whole supply chain based on this idea of an environmental balance sheet.
Oh, wow. The fashion industry. I mean, it's not exactly known for being eco-friendly, so I'm really curious to hear how they're tackling this.
They're really looking at every single step of the process, from the materials they use to the manufacturing, even how they ship the clothes. For starters, they switched to using organic cotton and recycled fibers instead of conventional cotton.
Okay, so that's a big step. Why is that so important?
Well, conventional cotton uses a ton of water to grow. So by switching to more sustainable materials, they're significantly reducing their water footprint. It's a big credit on their environmental balance sheet.
That makes sense. And what about the actual making of the clothes? That's going to have a big impact too, right?
Absolutely. They've invested in energy-efficient equipment for their factories, and they've set up systems to minimize waste and recycle as much as possible. They're even trying out some new dyeing techniques that use way less water and chemicals.
Wow, it sounds like they're going all in on this. But it's not just about what the company does, right? How are they getting consumers on board with this idea?
That's a great point. They've actually launched a clothing rental program. So instead of buying new clothes all the time, you can rent high-quality pieces.
Oh, that's so smart. I've heard about those.
Yeah, it reduces the overall demand for new clothes, which is a huge win for the environment.
It's a win for everyone, really. The company, the consumers, and the planet. It shows how this idea can lead to new ways of doing business that are better for everyone. Are there any examples of how, like, regular people are applying this concept in their own lives?
The paper doesn't really go into individual stories, but it does emphasize that what individuals do matters a lot. Even small changes in our daily habits can have a big impact when you multiply them across millions of people.
I think that's really important to hear because it's so easy to feel helpless when you think about the huge environmental problems we're facing. Like, what can one person really do?
It's true. These problems are massive. But we can't let that paralyze us. It's about focusing on the things we can control and those small actions that collectively make a real difference.
So it's about empowerment, not guilt tripping.
Exactly. What are some of those small but meaningful actions that the paper talks about?
Well, one that they emphasize is reducing food waste. Apparently, a huge amount of the food we produce globally ends up wasted, and that's a big problem for the environment.
It is. And it might seem like a small thing, but there's a lot we can do at home to make a difference. Being more mindful of portion sizes, storing food properly, getting creative with leftovers, even composting. All of these small actions can add up to less food ending up in landfills.
Yeah, it's about changing how we think about food waste, seeing it as something we can prevent, not just an inevitable part of life. What other everyday actions can make a positive impact on our environmental balance sheets?
Transportation is another big one. Choosing to walk, bike, or take public transport instead of only driving alone can significantly reduce our carbon footprint.
I know that's important, but I have to admit, it's not always realistic. Like, if you live somewhere without good public transport or you have to drive for work,
I get it. And that's where things like carpooling or choosing a more fuel-efficient vehicle can help. Even combining errands so you're making fewer trips can make a difference.
Right. It's about being mindful and making conscious choices whenever possible. I'm really seeing how this environmental balance sheet idea can shift our perspective.
It's about moving beyond just consuming and discarding and thinking about our responsibility to the planet.
That's a great way to apply it. But I also think it's important to acknowledge that not everyone has the same opportunities to make sustainable choices. Some people might not be able to afford an electric car, or they might live in areas without good public transport.
That's a really important point. And that's why we need to address these issues systematically as well. We need policies and infrastructure that make sustainable choices more accessible and affordable for everyone.
So it's not just about individual responsibility. It's about creating a system that makes it easier to live sustainably.
Exactly. It's about making sure everyone has the opportunity to contribute to a positive environmental balance, regardless of their circumstances. And that brings us back to the importance of collective action, right? Like advocating for policies that support renewable energy, sustainable transportation, and responsible consumption. It's not just about what we do as individuals, but how we work together to create a better future.
Absolutely. It's about voting with our wallets, but also using our voices to demand change.
It's about recognizing that we're all in this together.
Exactly. And that's one of the key takeaways from the paper. It's not about individual action versus collective action. It's about both.
Finding that balance, just like we're trying to find balance with the environment.
Exactly. And the environmental balance sheet can help us navigate those efforts on both a personal and a societal level.
This conversation has given me so much to think about. I'm feeling inspired by all the real-world action that's happening and motivated to make changes in my own life.
That's great to hear. Remember, even small steps can lead to big change.
Okay, so we've talked about cities, businesses, and individuals, but what about the role of technology in all of this? Does the paper talk about how technology can help us create a more positive environmental balance?
It does touch on that, and it's a really important part of the conversation. Technology can be a powerful tool for both measuring our environmental impact and finding solutions to reduce it.
Okay, so how is technology being used in that way? Can you give us some examples?
One area where technology is already making a huge difference is in renewable energy. The advances in solar and wind technology have made them more efficient and affordable than ever. And we're seeing the development of smart grids that can optimize energy distribution and reduce waste.
So technology is helping us move away from fossil fuels, which is a huge step in the right direction. What about other areas?
Another exciting area is precision agriculture. Farmers are using sensors, drones, and data analysis to optimize their use of water, fertilizers, and pesticides. This helps them minimize their environmental impact while also increasing their yields.
Wow, so technology is helping us produce food more sustainably. But what about on the consumer side? Can technology help us make more informed choices about the things we buy?
There's some really cool stuff happening there, too. For example, some companies are creating apps that let you scan product barcodes to see information about their environmental footprint.
That would be amazing, like being able to see the environmental cost right there in the store.
Exactly. It's all about transparency and giving people access to information so they can make better choices. And technology is making that easier than ever before.
But technology is not a cure-all, right? There are still downsides and ethical considerations to think about.
You're absolutely right. Technology is just a tool. And like any tool, it can be used for good or for bad. We have to be careful about unintended consequences and make sure that new technologies are developed and used responsibly and ethically.
So it's not about just blindly embracing new technology. It's about using it thoughtfully and intentionally to address environmental problems.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that technology alone isn't enough. We need to combine technological innovation with social innovation, policy changes, and shifts in individual behavior.
It's about a holistic approach to sustainability, one that uses the best of what technology has to offer while also addressing the root causes of environmental problems.
Perfectly said. It's about finding that synergy between technology, policy, and individual action.
Okay, we've covered a lot of ground here, from real-world examples to the potential and pitfalls of technology. But I think there's one more crucial thing we need to talk about, the historical context of our relationship with the environment.
That's a really important point. Understanding how we got here is essential for figuring out how to create a more sustainable future.
Does the paper address that historical perspective at all?
It does touch on it, and it's really fascinating. For most of human history, our impact on the environment was pretty limited. We lived in small communities, relied on local resources, and our consumption patterns were in sync with the natural world.
It's a good reminder that our current way of living isn't the only way.
Exactly. The paper argues that the Industrial Revolution was a major turning point. Mass production, urbanization, and consumer culture all led to a massive increase in how much we consume and how much waste we produce.
So it's not just about technology itself, but how we use it and the economic systems that drive our consumption.
Exactly. And the paper suggests that we need to fundamentally rethink those systems and find ways to decouple economic growth from environmental degradation.
That's a huge challenge. But how do we do that? Does the paper offer any solutions?
It highlights a few promising approaches, like circular economy models, which focus on reuse, repair, and recycling, and the idea of a sharing economy, which encourages access over ownership.
Those are both really interesting ideas. It's about challenging the way we've always done things and finding new, more sustainable models.
It's about shifting our mindsets and recognizing that we can do things differently.
This conversation has been so insightful. I'm feeling really inspired by all the possibilities and motivated to rethink my own choices and actions.
That's fantastic to hear. Remember, every action, big or small, has the potential to make a difference.
Okay, we've covered so much in this deep dive, but there's one more thing from the paper that I want to touch on before we wrap up. The ethical dimensions of all of this.
Absolutely. The ethical considerations are fundamental to everything we've discussed.
Okay, I'm ready to dive into those ethical waters. What are some of the key ethical questions that the paper brings up?
One of the most basic questions is, who decides what's an environmental debit or credit? And how do we make sure those decisions are fair and just?
That's a good point. There's a danger that these systems could end up reflecting the values of only a certain group of people.
Exactly. If we only focus on things like carbon emissions, which are easy to measure, we might miss other important impacts, like biodiversity loss or water pollution, that disproportionately affects certain communities.
So it's really important to have diverse perspectives and voices involved in creating and using these systems.
Absolutely. We need to make sure that these systems are inclusive and take into account the needs and values of all stakeholders.
That's a really important ethical consideration. What other challenges does the paper highlight?
Another big question is how we balance the needs of current generations with the needs of future generations.
Mm.
The choices we make today have long-term consequences.
It's about intergenerational justice, right? Making sure we don't destroy the planet for our children and grandchildren.
Exactly. The environmental balance sheet can help us think more critically about those long-term impacts. It forces us to consider the consequences of our actions beyond our own lifetimes.
It's about expanding our sense of responsibility to include not just ourselves and the people around us, but also future generations and the planet as a whole.
Well said. It highlights the ethical imperative of sustainability. It's not just about what's convenient or profitable now. It's about ensuring the well-being of all life on Earth for generations to come.
This conversation has really deepened my understanding of the ethical dimensions of sustainability. It's not just about technical solutions or economic calculations. It's about values, principles, and a shared sense of responsibility.
I completely agree. And the environmental balance sheet, while not perfect, can be a valuable tool for navigating these ethical questions and making more informed decisions.
It's a framework that encourages us to think more holistically and consider the ripple effects of our actions.
Exactly. It's about moving beyond a narrow focus on individual gain and embracing a broader understanding of our interconnectedness and our responsibility to care for each other and the planet.
This has been such a thought-provoking conversation. I'm feeling really inspired by all the possibilities and also challenged by the ethical complexities we've discussed.
It's been a pleasure exploring these ideas with you.
But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with one final thought from the paper. It argues that at its core, the environmental balance sheet isn't really about numbers, it's about values.
That's so true. It's about recognizing that we are part of nature, not separate from it, and that our well-being is deeply connected to the health of the planet.
So as you go about your day, consider, what actions are you taking that add to your environmental credit? And what choices might be adding to your debt?
And even more importantly, what kind of world do you want to help create? Because every one of us has a role to play in shaping that future.
Thank you all for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious.
And remember, every choice we make, every action we take, creates a ripple effect. Let's make those ripples count.
Welcome back, everyone. We've been on this deep dive exploring the environmental balance sheet, looking at our impact on the planet, like almost like a financial ledger. It's really made me think about how even the small choices we make can add up.
Yeah, we've seen how this concept can be used not just by individuals, but also by cities and companies that are trying to make a real difference.
But there's this one part of the paper we haven't really touched on yet, and it might be the most important part. It talks about how this isn't just like a practical tool. It brings up some pretty big philosophical questions.
You're talking about the ethical side of things, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when we start trying to like account for nature, it makes us ask, how do we put a value on things that don't really have a price tag?
Exactly. Like we talked about earlier, how do you measure the impact of cutting down a forest, for example? It's not just about the value of the timber, right? It's the wildlife, the clean air, even like the cultural importance for people who live nearby. How do you even begin to put that on a balance sheet?
The paper doesn't try to give us all the answers. It's more about getting the conversation started. One point it makes is that if we just focus on carbon emissions, because those are easier to measure, we might miss other important environmental impacts, like you said, biodiversity loss or pollution.
So we need to look at the whole picture, not just focus on one thing. Like, think about the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. And that leads to another question. Even if we get really good at measuring our impact, who gets to decide what a good balance is? Is it the same for a developing country as it is for a wealthy one?
That's such an important point. This whole concept could easily be used to justify, you know, keep using up resources as long as someone is paying the environmental cost. We need to make sure that doesn't happen.
The paper really stresses the need for transparency. If a company or a country is using an environmental balance sheet, everyone should be able to see exactly how they're doing the calculations. And the people who are directly affected by those decisions need to have a say, not just the scientists.
So it's about making sure this concept doesn't become just another way to ignore the people who are most vulnerable to environmental damage.
That's a key part of the ethical challenge.
Yeah.
Making sure that our efforts to create a sustainable future are also creating a fairer world for everyone.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation. I know I'm going to be thinking about the environmental balance sheet long after this episode is over. It's given me a new way to look at my own choices and also to hold the people in power accountable.
That's the power of ideas, right? They can change how we see things. And hopefully this deep dive has given you, our listener, some new tools for understanding and engaging with these complex environmental issues.
Knowledge is power. But as we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought from the paper. It says that ultimately the environmental balance sheet isn't really about numbers, it's about values.
That's so true. It's about understanding that we're part of nature, not separate from it, and that our well-being depends on a healthy planet.
So as you go about your day, think about this. What can you do to add to your environmental credit? What choices might be adding to your debt?
And most importantly, what kind of world do you want to help create? Because we all have a role to play in shaping that future.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious.
And remember, every choice we make, every action we take, creates a ripple effect. Let's make those ripples count.